Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Umpqua Holdings Corporation First Quarter Earnings Conference. Just as a reminder, today's call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Mr. Ron Farnsworth, Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay, thank you, Sarah. Good morning, and thank you for joining us today on our First Quarter 2016 Earnings Call. With me this morning are Ray Davis, the President and CEO of Umpqua Holdings Corporation, Court O'Haver, our President of Commercial Banking, Greg Seedley, our President of Consumer Banking, and Dave Shotwell, our Chief Credit Officer. Court, Greg, and Dave will join us as we take your questions after our prepared remarks. Yesterday afternoon, we issued an earnings release discussing our first quarter 2016 results. We have also prepared a slide presentation, which we will refer to during our remarks this morning. Both of these materials can be found on our website at umpquabank.com under the Ask Us Investor Relations section. During today's call, we may make forward-looking statements which are subject to risks and uncertainties and are intended to be covered by the safe harbor provisions of federal securities law. For a list of factors that may cause actual results to differ materially from expectations, please refer to page 2 of our earnings conference call presentation, as well as the disclosures contained within our SEC filings. I will now turn the call over to Ray Davis.
Okay, good morning. We are pleased to report that Umpqua's financial results for this past quarter were once again solid and in line with expectations. Our operating earnings of 29 cents per fully diluted share was driven during the quarter by strong growth in both loans and deposits, as well as solid progress in rebalancing the overall loan portfolio. As previously indicated, management continues to feel confident in the company's ability to grow earning assets and deposits, as reflected in the following results for the quarter. Gross loan growth was $489 million, or 12%, on an annualized basis. Our commercial loan pipeline, as we moved into the second quarter, remained strong at $2.4 billion. Total deposit growth was $456 million, or 10%, on an annualized basis. And FinPac, our equipment leasing subsidiary, reported lease growth of more than $63 million, or 36% annualized, which carry a 10.7% average yield. You may remember that when we acquired FinPac in July of 2013, we projected the company would grow from a $250 million organization to $1 billion in total assets within 4 to 5 years. We're pleased to inform you that as the end of last quarter, their totals exceeded $790 million, placing them well on track to reach that initial growth projection. FinPac's growth and contributions to the company's earnings since acquisition have, of course, been outstanding. Management has also been focused on the company's overall loan portfolio mix. Although we recognize that significant changes will take time, we are taking actions now that are responsible and necessary for us to sustain our flexibility as we continue to grow the portfolio. To this end, during this past quarter, we sold or positioned loans for sale as follows. Acquired impaired CRE loans of $10 million were sold. $171 million of fixed-rate residential loans were moved to loans held for sale, and the sale closed on April 9th. And within our multifamily loan portfolio, we sold $130 million and moved another $85 million to held for sale, which will also close in the month of April. We do expect additional loan sales to occur throughout 2016. Last quarter, I mentioned our resolve to reduce the company's efficiency ratio to 60%. I'm pleased to report that we're already making progress towards this goal. This past quarter, we reduced our core operating expense by $2.1 million, even with a $3.4 million seasonal increase in payroll taxes, which, of course, will level off again during the rest of this year. Ron will provide more details on this and additional initiatives that are underway to continue this trend. Ron, take us away.
Okay, thanks, Ray. So as usual, we prepared a slide presentation with our detailed first quarter financial information, which is included in the investor relations section of umpquabank.com. I will refer to these slides during my remarks. Before I get into the details on our financials, let me update you on changes we've made to our non-GAAP operating disclosures. These changes are being made to more accurately report the ongoing operating results of the company in light of the current interest rate environment. and related rate fluctuations that have had an impact on fair value accounting. Again, we realize these are non-GAAP results. However, our intention is to give you a more detailed view of how well the company is performing. These adjustments include the change in the fair value of the MSR asset and mortgage revenue, and the change in the fair value of the customer loan level swap derivative, or CVA, and other non-interest income. We're also backing out gain or loss on investment securities and exit disposal costs and other expense related to exit costs we have for store or facility consolidations and closures. Starting first with the P&L, as noted on page 5 of the slide deck, for the first quarter, we reported 29 cents per share in our non-GAAP operating earnings measure, flat with Q4 and up 1 cent from the year-ago quarter. Adjusting out the non-operating items, we saw a $2.1 million decline in net interest income, a slight increase in provision for loan loss, a $1.1 million increase in non-interest income, mostly related to higher mortgage production revenue, and a $2.1 million decline in our operating non-interest expense to $180 million, which included a seasonal increase in payroll taxes of $3.4 million. After tax, these all netted out to 29 cents per share for the quarter, consistent with the fourth quarter. Turning to net interest income and margin on slide 6, net interest income decreased by $2.1 million from the prior quarter level, related in part to one less day in the quarter and to changes in credit discount accretion. For the first quarter, Sterling credit discount accretion recorded in interest income was $16.5 million, up from $13.1 million in the prior quarter. Of that total, approximately $6.5 million was accelerated based on the sale of a small portfolio of legacy Sterling-purchased credit-impaired CRE loans. Excluding this sale, the credit discount accretion would have been approximately $10 million, down slightly as expected from the prior quarter. We will continue to report a moderate decline in credit discount accretion over time. Net interest income excluding total credit discount accretion was $200 million this quarter, down from $205 million last quarter. This $5 million decrease was a result of one less day this quarter, costing $2.9 million, a decrease in core loan yields of $2 million, due in part to portfolio mix changes and impacts from the continued low interest rate environment, and changes in interest from cash and investments, mostly offsetting changes in deposits and borrowings. With this, the total net interest margin was down 3 basis points to 4.34%, and the margin excluding credit discount was down 10 basis points to 3.98%. On slide 7, with a strong credit quality performance, the total provision for loan and lease losses was $4.8 million, in line with the prior quarter level. Moving to non-interest income on slide 8, we saw an increase of $1 million from the fourth quarter level, driven mostly by higher mortgage production revenue. Gain on loan sales of $2.4 million was slightly higher this quarter, and other income was down slightly from lower customer loan level swap trading revenue. I'll talk about the balance sheet in a few minutes, but we had $170 million in loans held for sale at quarter end that traded in early April at a $2.5 million gain, which will be reflected in the second quarter results. These kinds of gains should continue through the rest of 2016 as we continue to manage the portfolio to the mix and size we are targeting. The largest component of our non-interest income is mortgage banking revenue. Now, the total GAAP figure this quarter included a $20.6 million charge on the change in fair value of the MSR, resulting directly from the significant decline in long-term interest rates since December. The MSR asset is now valued at 88 basis points of the service portfolio, down from 101 basis points at year-end. Excluding the MSR fair value change, mortgage production and servicing revenue was $36.1 million, up $3.2 million from the previous quarter. On page 9, you will see for-sale mortgage originations declined seasonally by 4% from the prior quarter level. Our gain on sale margin increased to 3.72%, up from 3.19% the last two quarters, based in part on a higher refinancing activity and an increase in the locked pipeline heading into Q2. Also, our servicing revenue continues to grow to $7.6 million for the first quarter, up 18% over the same period a year ago. We expect mortgage production to remain strong in the second quarter and expect our gain on sale margin to remain in the mid-3% range. Now turning to non-interest expense on slide 10. Our operating expense was $180 million for the first quarter, down from $182.2 million for the fourth quarter. Our payroll tax expense was up seasonally $3.4 million this quarter, which we expect to trend down approximately $1.5 million in Q2 and another $1 million each in Q3 and Q4. In addition, our first quarter operating expense includes a $1.4 million OREO loss, which will be offset by $1.25 million OREO gain in early April. We had originally expected these two items to offset one another here in Q1, but half of the sale was delayed to April. We expect further reductions to our balance of OREO in the second and third quarters. Last quarter, we guided operating expense of $177 million, plus or minus home lending variable expense and the normal seasonal increase in payroll taxes. Again, the seasonal increase in payroll tax was $3.4 million, and home lending expense was $1.7 million over our guidance target due to higher volume. When you deduct the OREO charge and the payroll tax seasonal surge, our operating expense in Q1 would have been $175 million, slightly under our guidance. As Ray mentioned last quarter, we've made great strides on a prospective basis in several areas for our goal of a 60% or lower efficiency ratio. And assuming the economy doesn't throw us a curveball, we expect to get there later this year. Some additional initiatives we are taking include the previously announced 26 store consolidations with an expected annualized savings of $6 million starting in the middle of the third quarter, along with excess back office facility consolidation, streamlining our front and back office operations, and I think this is fair to say, our store network will be continually reviewed for optimization in light of customer utilization changes. Ex the OREO and payroll tax surge in Q1, our efficiency ratio would have been under 61% this quarter. As for the non-GAAP expense adjustments, we expect merger expense to remain at about this level for the next two quarters. Also, we expect we'll have $5 to $6 million in exit disposal costs in the second quarter related to the store consolidations. With that, I'm going to now turn to slide 11 on the balance sheet. Interest-bearing cash was up slightly this quarter to $613 million, which was driven by the deposit growth we experienced in the quarter. Our goal is to keep our interest-bearing cash in the half-billion to billion-dollar range and our investments in the $2.5 to $2.6 billion range for the foreseeable future. On slide 12, you'll see the mix of the loan portfolio. As discussed earlier, we sold a small pool of legacy Sterling purchased credit-impaired CRE loans this quarter, along with $130 million of portfolio multifamily loans. In addition, we transferred into held for sale $171 million of portfolio residential loans and $85 million of multifamily loans for sale in the second quarter. Again, grossing up for these sales and transfers, our total loan growth this quarter was $489 million, or 12% annualized. Now on slide 13, total deposits increased by $456 million from the prior quarter, or 10% annualized. Our loan-to-deposit ratio ended the quarter at 93%. The cost of interest-bearing deposits remained stable at 27 basis points for the quarter. Lastly, on slide 15, I want to highlight capital, noting that all of our regulatory ratios remain in excess of well-capitalized levels, with our Tier 1 common at 11.2%, and total risk-based capital at 14.2%. We repurchased $3.5 million of stock this quarter, and with the cash dividend, our total payout ratio was strong at 61% of operating earnings. Our excess capital is approximately $215 million, down slightly from last quarter based on the strong loan growth we continue to see. As we have discussed for the last few years, we plan to continue to employ excess capital in a prudent and thoughtful manner. And now I'll turn back the call to Ray to wrap up our prepared remarks.
Okay, before we take your questions, a few comments on our Pivotus Ventures subsidiary. Our Pivotus team in Silicon Valley is making terrific progress on reimagining and creating a new digital banking platform that will allow Umpqua to orchestrate our customers' commercial lives. As we indicated in our original press release announcing Pivotus, these activities and new technologies will go a long way to sustain Umpqua's relevancy into the future as the digital world expands and as customer preferences continue to change. One unique aspect of our endeavor with Pivotus is to collaborate with other like-minded institutions whose focus is also on customer experience and being able to successfully differentiate that experience through new technologies. We look forward to announcing more on collaboration in the near future. We'll now take your questions.
Thank you. To the audience, if you have a question or comment today, please press star then one on your touchtone phone. For those of you joining us today using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute button is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star then one if you have a question or comment today. We'll go first to Aaron Deer of Sandler O'Neill and Partners.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning, Aaron.
Ron, can you walk through your margin numbers again? If I heard you correctly, I thought you said that the core margin differential was down three basis points in the quarter versus the 10, and I'm just wondering if you could walk through that math again for me.
It's actually the total reported margin was down 3 basis points for the quarter. The margin excluding credit discount accretion was down to 10 to 3.98%.
Okay.
In terms of the net interest income on the dollars, the total change was down $2 million. If you back out the credit discount accretion, it was down 5. 2.9 of that 5, again, was because there was one less day this quarter. And the other $2 million was mostly the impact of lower loan yields, actually credit discount accretion. And those lower loan yields were the result of continued repricing pressure in the low-rate environment and or some mix changes.
So can you differentiate? So obviously the day count is the day count, but with the other – items, I guess 10 basis points is a big swing, and even, you know, if it's less than that on a nominal basis, how much more, I mean, is there more pressure to come? Can you get anything back in terms of remix changes? And where is the spread between the new loans that are coming on versus where the portfolio is that's, you know, that's causing this much pressure at this point?
Let me hit the first part of that. So, again, continued strong loan growth will help offset the impact of the lower rate environment in terms of the margin pressure over time. We do expect the margin as a percentage will continue to face headwinds like it is for most banks in this environment. We fully expect to see continued strong loan growth over the course of the year. So that obviously helped mute the impact of the margin as a percentage for the quarter. In terms of new loan yields, new business yields on the commercial side, you're talking low threes. On the owner rock CRE, you're talking upper threes to four. On investor CRE, you're probably talking low fours. Multifamily is upper threes to low fours. Consumer is going to be in that 3 to 4 range. And then, of course, the growth we really like to see and have seen significant amounts of is FinPac on leasing, and those yields are up around 10%.
The Ginnie Mae residential loans were repurchased. Was that a putback? Is that what that was?
No, after 90 days, these are, of course, loans that we were servicing, but after 90 days past due, we have the unilateral right to repurchase them. No loss potential on those. I want to very much point that out. They're still backed by Ginnie Mae but then we'll just do the workout over the next month or two, turn those back into the pool. So no loss reflected on those.
Okay, and I probably missed it in the presentation. Did you give any sort of update in terms of any remaining cost saves from Sterling?
Good question. So in terms of cost saves from Sterling, we do expect some to remain. We expect in all over the course of this year would be approximately 10% over our original target. But keep in mind what I talked about on the expense side. In terms of the other initiatives we have underway, over the balance of the year, and that number this quarter being closer to $175 million of expense, ex the OREO timing and the seasonal payroll tax surge. So those amounts are going to be higher than the balance left on the Sterling-specific cost saves, but we're definitely getting after it.
Okay, very good. Thanks for taking my question.
Thanks.
Up next from RBC Capital Markets, we'll go to Joe Morford.
Thanks. Good morning.
Morning, Drew.
First, just I guess following up on Aaron's question on expenses, just to clarify, Ron, I think you said the run rate savings from the branch consolidations would be $6 million, and you start to see that in the third quarter, or
middle of the third quarter forward annualized should be $6 million of savings.
Forward annual, so kind of you hit that full run rate by mid Q3.
Correct, going forward.
Right. Okay. Right. All right. And then I guess I had a question. Deposit growth was really strong this quarter, and I was just curious kind of what initiatives do you have or what's driving that activity, because it continues to be pretty encouraging.
Yeah, Joe, it's Greg. And I think Cort can chime in here as well. I think both sides of the organization, consumer and commercial, are always in the water on deposits. We spent a lot of time with the team really focusing on the right-hand side of the balance sheet. Obviously, we've seen good, strong loan growth over the course of the last many quarters. And solid deposit growth, but it hasn't been quite at the pace. So part of this is just reprioritizing, make sure we are focused on gathering relationship-based, high-quality deposits, making sure that we have the right incentives and alignment in place. And I think you'll hear about more on that issue and initiative in the quarters to come.
Okay. And then just, Ron, I think, or anyway, you've talked a bit about on the capital, part of the reason you've retained some is just being cautious with the outlook for the economy. Have you, as you've gone through this quarter, have you seen any kind of change in the customer behavior that gives you some cause for the concern? Or, with the loan growth numbers, it looks like things are still pretty healthy.
Yeah, they are, and no cause for concern. And I'll point out, though, that $200 million of excess capital is not an egregious amount of excess capital. It's a nice, safe, comfortable amount of excess capital. And we'll continue to be prudent and thoughtful on how we deploy it.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Steven Alexopoulos of J.P. Morgan has our next question.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody.
Sure.
I wanted to start. You guys had good loan growth in the quarter. Quite a few banks have talked about momentum building through the quarter, whereas January was pretty weak and March was fairly strong. Did you guys see this? Did you see momentum build through the quarter? And how do you feel here in 2Q?
Even Cort, we actually had great momentum going into the year, and quite honestly, maybe February was off slightly from January, but it was pretty consistent month over month.
Okay, that's helpful. And Cort, maybe for you, regarding the loan sales, can you remind us of the loan mix you're targeting and maybe how far away you are from the point where you could hold more of your production?
So we sold $130 million in multifamily. We've got another $85 sitting in held for sale. We're going to look at how we continue to sell multifamily down as a function of what our production is. And we have kind of trimmed the edges a little bit on the types of loans we're making in multifamily. Look at our preterm payoffs. We do get hit with some payoffs unexpectedly. And then we'll balance down some throughout the balance of the year. We kind of look at that on a quarter-to-quarter basis, Stephen, to be quite honest with you. We know the market's real liquid. We did the 130 we did with five partner banks, and we've been through the negotiation process, and we feel that if we have to go out and sell something down to continue to balance, it's a fairly efficient process.
Okay. That's helpful. And then one last one for Ray. You mentioned Pivotus. I assume this is the equivalent of a pre-revenue startup at this stage. One, how much is this initiative costing you guys? And can you talk about the thoughts here and the plans to eventually monetize the investment?
Well, I think we want to monetize everything we do, Stephen. No question about that. I will tell you, as far as overall costs, it's yet to be seen. We have one of the things that I think perhaps the media and maybe people in the industry have missed a little bit. It is the unique way that we're going about this, and that is through this collaboration effort. I know I beat it to death, and I have talked about it two or three times, it seems like, on the calls. It's very unique. It's not, that hasn't been done before within the industry that we're aware of. And our collaboration efforts will basically mean that there will be banks that will join us, as well as perhaps other non-bank institutions who have access to a significant amount of data to join with us to collaborate. And as part of that collaboration, there will be financial requirements, resource requirements, to move this forward as fast as we possibly can. So that is that's a moving target right now. I will tell you that today that Pivotus is not having any material impact on the performance of the company as far as revenues or expense. But we are certainly very much focused. And as I think I've mentioned in my previous call, that Pivotus reports directly to me. And the general managers of Pivotus are extremely talented young guys who I believe very strongly will be able to bring something to the table that we can monetize, spin off perhaps even in the near future. But we'll wait and see.
Fair enough. I appreciate all the color. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Yep.
We'll go next to Matthew Clark of Piper Jaffray.
Hey, good morning. Just maybe first on expenses. You guys provided some guidance coming into this quarter. Just curious whether or not you might want to venture a guess about 2Q, knowing that mortgage, you know, is going to be probably a little stronger.
Yeah, we do expect mortgage to be stronger into 2Q. Not going to give specific dollar guidance, but if you look at the trending, it's going to be down just based off the initiatives we have underway. And then, again, I mentioned earlier that payroll tax. So we're up $3.4 million in Q1. It'll drop off $1.5 million in Q2, about $1 million in Q3, and again $1 million in Q4, just in terms of timing through the year. And also keep in mind, I mentioned in my comments on our OREO side, there was $1.4 million loss in Q1 that we expected to have timed with an offsetting gain. That offsetting gain will occur in Q2. So if you're looking specific to Q2, there's a $3 million drop without doing anything combined between payroll tax and the OREO change.
Okay, great. And then mortgage expenses in the quarter, could you quantify that?
Yeah, total mortgage expense in the quarter was right around $28 million.
Okay, great. And then your comments about some more gain on sale of non-mortgage loans, you know, as you manage down your concentration, it just seems like the pace is stepping up to manage, you know, those concentrations down. Any reason for that, or could you maybe help us get a sense for, you know, where you want those portfolios to be, whether it be, you know, on a percentage basis or, you know, on a dollar basis, you know, in terms of what's left to work down?
Yeah, so in terms of the pace, I don't know, maybe if you just look back at the last 3 months compared to the prior 3 months, you could say they're accelerating. But, again, over the last 2 years, we've been opportunistic on a quarterly basis. So they'll ebb and flow based off of growth and other factors. We do expect they'll continue. I can't tell you it's going to be the same amount in Q2. The one underlying trend, though, is we do expect the growth and to remain very strong, and also net growth over the course of the year. In terms of the overall ideal mix we're working towards, and again, this is a multi-year plan. We have the ability to be opportunistic. If you take the overall portfolio, break it into three buckets, commercial, investor, and consumer, our targets long-term are roughly 40% for commercial, 30% for investor, and 30% for consumer. Right now, we're under on commercial, we're a bit over on investor, and we're a bit under in consumer. So those are the moves you'll see us getting towards those targets over time, and again, we'll be optimistic.
Okay, great. And then just last one for me. Just curious on succession planning and anything to report on that front.
Nothing to report.
I assume that process is underway. Is that something you're going to be more vocal about or transparent about or not? Just curious.
Well, I don't know if there's any reason to be any more vocal than we have been about it. We've always had a succession plan in the bank, and it's something that the board and management obviously take very seriously. But I think it's right now it's business as usual.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks.
And once again to the audience, it is star then one for questions. We'll go next to Jeff Willis of D.A. Davidson.
Thanks. Good morning.
Hey, morning, Jeff.
On the merger costs, Ron, you mentioned that you expect the level to stay the same. Could we get a handle on, one, what is recurring there, and then maybe is there a figure tie that up? Is it an ongoing expense? Could you maybe quote an annual number? Kind of any sort of additional color on what it is and how much more to come?
Yeah, you bet. So that was the $2 million I talked about after tax, and I expected it to stay at about that level, give or take, over the next two quarters. You look out into next year, assuming no M&A, I expect that number to go to zero. So really what we're dealing with at this point is a final tie-up of a couple of smaller system-related items, but nothing significantly identifiable within that number to point out, other than I expect it to be about that level for the next two quarters and then trend down. If you go back over the last 2 years and compare it to the original deal announcement, we did talk about some changes in terms of moving items, differences between the original goodwill impact and merger expense. But in total, I think we're pretty close to wrapping that up just over the next few quarters.
So have you exceeded or are you still in line with what was the number on the combined merger costs?
Well, I don't have that here right at my fingertips. I'll tell you, we're going to be right in line with where we expected to be. Again, after the deal was closed, we talked about some shift between original expectations going to goodwill, which affects tangible book, moving a bit of that into merger expense over time just based off the accounting rules. So we're going to be in line with our original targets.
And then on the in the other income, you dropped from sequentially, it was 13.3 last quarter to 8.3. So a $5 million drop, I assume the fair value adjustment was close to $2 million of that. Is there something else that came out in the quarter?
I think hopefully you'll appreciate the enhanced disclosures we put out on the second page of the earnings release and or the deck. But if you look at just the CVA change, which is the item within that, that would have been a $2.5 million swing from Q4 to Q1. Aside from that, I talked about a little bit lower just core swap trading revenue, just based off the drop in rates this quarter.
Gotcha. Okay. And then one last one on the, I think you guys discussed on the last quarter that, some LPO opportunities in Las Vegas and other markets. Any further thoughts, or is that materializing further?
Well, we opened the San Diego office in February, and they've hit the ground running. In fact, based on their current loan production and footings, are probably in the black. So we've seen good progress with the new CDCs we've opened. Vegas is doing really well. We always continue to look at major metropolitan markets, and for us, as we've talked about before, it's always about the teams of people that we can hire. And we have our eyes in a few markets, and if we find the right teams of people, then we'll act.
Thanks, Court.
And as a final reminder to our audience today, it is star then one for questions. From KBW, we'll go to Jackie Chimera.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Morning, Jackie.
In the past, you talked about jumbo sales, and I'm wondering if you could just provide an update on that.
Jumbo sales. If you, Ron referenced some of the work that we had done in terms of moving jumbos and long-term fixed duration assets to held for sale and subsequent sale on the 7th of April. And Jackie, what we're going to do is we're continuing to look at ways to reduce our holdings of jumbos as we balance out portfolio. Again, goal is over time to continue to drive up the agency mix and to make sure that we're managing the portfolio of overall SFR portfolio loans appropriately. So we feel like very good execution in what closed here in April. Ron will have more to report on that, I'm sure, at the second quarter financial results 90 days from now.
Okay. So are you looking more to the jumbos that are already on the portfolio for sales, or would there be future new generation that would be sold?
Well, I think realistically we've tweaked our portfolio program so that what you'll see is that there's going to be an ongoing harvesting of what's already in residence, if you will, on our portfolio. But if we have opportunities in current flow to be able to do things and correspondent relationships and other things like that, we'll do that as well. So I think we're looking at all options to make sure that we're maintaining discipline around portfolio growth.
Okay. Thank you. Question on the 60% efficiency target. When I look at that, do you yourselves look at it on a GAAP basis, or do you look at it on an operating basis, meaning how do you take the fair value marks into account when you're thinking about that?
We've always looked at that on an operating basis.
Okay. I Everything else I had was already asked. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Jackie.
Jared Shaw, Wells Fargo Securities, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Could you just talk a little bit about what you've seen in terms of credit migration during the quarter, not necessarily just to non-performing, but some of the earlier stage movement? And then as a corollary to that, would future provision growth really be dependent upon loan growth, or is it more dependent at this point upon that internal credit migration?
Dave Shotwell here. Provision in the future will be based on loan growth. We're not seeing any early stage delinquency. I think the bank's benefiting from our footprint, which is primarily major metro West Coast, and we're not seeing any leading indicators that are causing us concern at this time.
Okay, thanks. And then finally, just on the FinPAC growth, as we look at that growing over the course of the year, is there any seasonality that we should be planning for, or would that be would it be more linear?
Hey, it's Cort. You know, there's a little bit of seasonality in the third quarter. July and August, but really it's pretty minimal.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks.
And it appears there are no further questions at this time. I would like to turn the conference back over to our presenters for closing remarks.
Okay, thanks, Sarah. And thank you all for your interest in Uncle Holdings and your attendance on the call today. This will conclude the call. Goodbye.
Thank you, and again, that does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation.